Tango Tango Papa 2047, February 21st, 2020.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Topeka, Kansas. So it's been a bit over a month since the last podcast. I had thought about recording one a little bit sooner than now, but just didn't work out. Last week I was in out in Salt Lake City, and then I have this fuel fired heater in the in the bunk here, the sleeper in my truck, and I'd been having some weird issues with it on and off, and I was gonna get it worked on at Salt Lake City, and then it I got it to work again. There was at one point it came up with a on the little LCD screen, it came up with this message, something about the fan not working, because it's got a little fan motor in it. And there was something, check the fan motor, and it wasn't coming on, and so the thing wasn't, it wasn't igniting. It burns diesel fuel, but it's got to have the fan, it goes through a sequence just like a furnace would, of coming on. And so I was able to get it to work. It started working. I basically cut the power to it and then brought it back up. And then after that, and that was while I was still in Utah, and I was going to go to Salt Lake City. But then after that, it started working fine after that. Every time I tried it, it worked fine. And so they had me pick a load up at Hiram, Utah. So I kind of skipped Salt Lake City because I thought, well, I'll end up waiting there, because last time I ended up waiting an entire day, and I didn't want to do that again, but turned out to be a bad decision. But so I Hiram, Utah, picked the load up. It was, a load of actually meat, three drops. First one was in the first one was in Harrisonville, Missouri. That's south of Kansas City. And then the second one was in Topeka, Kansas. The third one was in St. Louis, Missouri. And then it ended up, I ended up with problems after that. But so in any case, I left Hiram, Utah. And, everything was fine. It was above freezing. Made it, so I made it to Evanston, Wyoming. The road was nice and dry. But they had the road closed. Wyoming had shut down Interstate 80. And, it's weird. If you look at their, the Wyoming, 511 traffic website, it had all these things about rolling road closure. And so, come to find out, what Wyoming does when they decide they're going to close the road, what they do, they'll allow so much traffic per area, because a lot of, Wyoming is a pretty rural state. And so what they're doing, once they decide that the local motels and what have you have filled up, because the road's closed, and it's most likely to close, there's a section, there's a couple of sections where, there's actually three places where it can really get bad. One of them is over by Evanston before you get to Evanston, it's after Evanston. If you're going east, you get to Evanston first, and then I think, I'd have to look at the map, but, so there's a section there that causes problems periodically. Then there's another section over by, before you get to Laramie, if you're continuing to go east. And then there's another problem area between Laramie and Cheyenne. So somewhere, I think it was between Laramie and Cheyenne is where the problem, or before you get to Laramie, I think was where the problem was, or there may have been a couple of problem areas. But regardless, they closed the road, and then they decide, well, we're going to start closing it before that. You know, even though the road was maybe dry and there's no snow or whatever, there's no problems, we're going to close those roads because, you know, farther and farther back, you know, so-called rolling road closure, because the motels and, you know, the services are all filled up, and so we don't want the traffic all building up in one area, and then you have this massive amount of traffic, you know, and people trying to buy services just in one area. So it's in a way you can look at it as a means of, you know, kind of spreading the love around, you know, the stop traffic. So I ended up, I stopped at Evanston, and I stopped there for about 10 hours or so. Then the road, they finally decided, oh, we're going to open the road up. And so I went ahead and left there, and I could still drive several hours, even though my clock was running. But So in any case, I went ahead and started driving, and I should have kept going, but it was in the middle of the night at that point, and there was still snow coming down somewhere, one of those other problem areas, probably the area east of Laramie. So there's this place called Wamsutter. So I stopped about 30 miles short of there, you know, at this, they have these pull-offs, you know, where you can kind of pull off and there's no services. And so I stopped in one of those pull-offs and spent the night there. Well, then the next morning, of course, there was no snow there. The road was nice and dry, but I looked on on their website, road closed again. So I should have kept going, but I didn't, you know, because I'd been up all day and, so be that as it may. So I did go ahead and drive on over to Wamsutter because there's a Love's truck stop there. And I didn't just want to be stranded at a pull-off area and, you know, with the no food. I have some canned goods in the truck with me, you know, that I could eat if I really got stuck, but who wants that? But once I got to Wamsutter, there was like a Subway. So made it to Wamsutter. That was the next day after, because I'd left Hiram, Utah early in the morning. I don't remember what day of the week it was, but I think it was on the 20th. Left there, made it over to Evanston, sat there for about 10 hours or so, something like that. Then left there, made it to that pull-off area where I spent the night at. Then I drove that next day, I drove to the 30 miles or so to Wamsutter, you know, where there was a Love's truck stop. And, of course, beyond Wamsutter, the road was, if you kept going on towards Rollins, the road was actually closed at Rollins. Or at least that's what the website said. And I could look, I've got an app that it's called Trucker Path that I can look at, and it kind of shows me reported how full various truck stops are. And so there's this rather large, a Flying J with a large parking lot at Rollins. And I looked at that. I could look at that, and it said lot is full, and that was in the middle of the day. So, no point in driving over there. Even, I wasn't that far. Mileage wise, it's not that far from Wamsutter to Rollins. So I sat there at the rest of that day at Wamsutter that loves, and, you know, kind of hung out there. And then the next day after that, it was late in the afternoon before they, you know, all of a sudden they opened the road up again, and then I could start driving. And so then after that, you know, I was able to kind of make it out of the state. But, and then I did run into, you know, that area between, or the east of, or it would be west of Laramie, the area west of Laramie, the problem area. It was actually snowing there, even though on either side of it, the sun was shining, the road was dry. But in this one place where there's this mountain, kind of a mountain area, it was snowing, and it was actually kind of sticking on the road, but made it through there, and then, you know, back into the dry road sunshine, and eventually made it out of the state. So, but in any case, while I, you know, when I made it to Wamsutter there, after, you know, after I'd spent the night in that pull-off area, I started having problems with the fuel-fired bunk heater, and the thing wouldn't initiate, and it kept popping up with a fan error, and I cut the power to it several times to try to get it to come on, and sometimes the fan would start turning, and I could hear the fan probably has some bearings going out of it, and so it just wouldn't go through the sequence to start. So, and it was cold, you know, so it, that one night it, I was just stuck there that one night, and you know, the thing would not, you know, of course I have a, you know, two sleeping bags. I've got a kind of a light sleeping bag and then a heavy sleeping bag, and so I kind of didn't sleep all that well. I could start the truck and make it idle for, that's the other problem. See, the company has the truck set up so that it will not idle. It just won't do it. It'll idle for, you know, you can keep messing with it, you know, and it, make it idle for more than 5 minutes. You know, if I, you know, the light starts flashing and it's going to shut off, I can, there's things that I can do to force it to, you know, the light, you know, for that to continue, but that means that I have to sit there and watch and, you know, do something, not be able to sleep. You know, now the other way of doing it is I can make it idle for about 30 minutes or so, or depending, by, if it's hooked to a trailer, you know, with the trailer brake applied, push in the tractor brake, and then the truck's in neutral. It'll idle for about 30 minutes, but then at some point, you know, the 30 minutes it expires, and then all of a sudden it shuts off. So there's really no tricks that I can pull to make the thing. They've got every possible way that you could kind of cause the thing to idle passively. You know, you can force it to idle if somebody sits there and, you know, like, as I explained, you know, kind of making it continue to idle. However, but otherwise, you can't just passively make it idle and sleep, for example. So, you know, so that night, you know, it was cold. It was probably like in the teens, like 18 degrees or something. And so I woke up two or three times. You know, I think I slept a little bit, but I kept getting up and forcing the thing to idle maybe for about 30 minutes and getting it really warm in here, and then you know, and then I could get a little bit, you know, a little bit more rest. So, but in any case, then once that next day I made it over to you know, I left there in the afternoon, I made it over to Cheyenne, where I had to, there's a TA truck stop east of Cheyenne. And that's where I was supposed to get fuel at. So I got fuel there, and I bought little, you know, they have these in the truck stops. And I had one. I've got one at home somewhere. You know, and I always thought the thing was next to useless, but it turns out it wasn't. They're a little like a battery-powered, yeah, well, not really battery-powered. You have to, you know, it's like you plug it into the 12-volt socket. So it's a 12-volt, 150-watt ceramic heater. you know, and you think, well, you know, 150 watts, you know, because like a hair dryer is going to be like 1500 watts, and you know, you can, you know, so those things get kind of warm. But a hair dryer, or, you know, that's 1500 watts is a far cry from a little tiny, you know, like a 12 volt ceramic heater that's pulling 150 watts. And so I bought one of those. You know, now I had, as I say, I had one at home, and I've, you know, it's somewhere at home in a shed or something. You know, if I dig, I could probably find it. But it was at home. So I bought one of these things with the idea that I, you know, because I've got curtains that go around the windshield, and those are the ones that I, you know, and normally if everything's normal and I'm going to bed, those are the ones that I close. But I've also got curtains back by the bunk, you know, these big long curtains that, you know, where I can close the bunk off and really make it dark. And so I, you know, I found that if I would close those curtains, that with that little 150 watt ceramic heater, that that actually made it almost livable, you know, where I could actually sleep a little bit, you know, because it then I wouldn't wait, you know, because the problem that I have, even with this big sleeping bag, is one of the problems, it won't zip up anymore because the zipper pull's gone, you know. So it the bag itself, when it was new and it had the zipper was still intact, the zipper pull was still intact. If you really had to be in cold temperatures, otherwise the thing was just too hot if you zipped it up. You know, the thing's rated like to 10 degrees or whatever. So, but with, you know, using it as a blanket, you know, with the 150 watt 12 volt ceramic heater, with the bunk curtains closed, that was actually kind of workable. But the problem that I have is what I started to say. If I get a little bit too cold, you know, like if it's just too cold, then I can't go to sleep. I'm wide awake. You know, it's just kind of uncomfortable enough, or it's too cold and I just can't go to sleep. So I bought a second one. I didn't know, you know, and that was kind of a gamble. You know, I've got a total of 4 12 volt sockets here in the truck. There's 2 up in the dash, and then there's 2 in the back here in the sleeper. And so of course I've got one of them, I've got my inverter plugged into, you know, the DC to AC inverter that I power most everything with. So I got one of those is already taken up, and then there's another one of them in the dash that you know, I have my Garmin GPS plugged into. And so then there's another one that's in the dash, and then there's this other extra one here in the sleeper. And so with 2 of the ceramic heaters, you know, I didn't know if the truck, you know, if it was going to be able to handle that, but it turns out that it handles it just fine, you know, because those, you know, the 12 volt socket supposedly will handle the maximum is going to be 180 watts, but that's probably kind of pushing it. But these, you know, the 150 watts is not too much. Now, you can't plug these things into like an extension cord, you know, because there's the equivalent of a 12 volt extension cord. You know, it can't do that. It's not going to handle it. You need to plug it in directly because it's got a fairly, it has to have a fairly heavy cord even for the 150 watts. And then even at that, the cord itself sort of gets warm. So, and then of course the plug itself, you can feel the plug and it's kind of warm too. But with both of those, what I found is that the temperature can get down, you know, even into the 20s, into the low 20s. And I, you know, I'm still pretty much able to sleep, you know, and be fairly comfortable. You know, so it's raising, you know, it raises the temperature up. Now tonight, right now, the last time I checked, it was 37 degrees outside here at Topeka. So it's not bad. I've got one of them, see if it's still running. Yep. I got one of them plugged in. I don't know if it, let me see. I'm going to put the microphone down there and see if you can hear it. Yep, you could hear it. So got one of them plugged in, kind of aimed up, you know, a little bit, and it's comfortable in here. Let me get my laser thermometer out here and see what it says. Okay, it's saying that I'm aiming it at the dash. Says 76. Aiming it at one of the, like the passenger seat, the back of the passenger seat, 71. Yep. So the ceiling is reading about six, yeah, about 67, 70. So it's about 70. I'd say it's about 70 degrees in here right now. At least at the moment. You know, of course, I'm giving some heat off as well. But, you know, I think the temperature tonight's supposed to probably, well, I looked earlier. Let me see what it says now. As far as how cool is it supposed to get tonight? See local weather. Let's see. It's supposed to get down to 29. So that's relatively cool, but that's, you know, that's not, it was cool, it was colder last night. So, but with both of those together and this, you know, I got the smaller sleeping bag, you know, kind of using it as a, more or less as a sheet, or, you know, the lighter sleeping bag, and then the heavier one, I'm using it as the blanket, and, so I should, you know, with that, both of those, I am able to kind of stay pretty comfortable. So, but in any case, I would, if the bunk heater were working, I would have probably went ahead and recorded a podcast. But that one day, you know, where I had to, you know, have, well, both days where I was at that Love's truck stop at Wamsutter, Wyoming, it was just too cold to do much. You know, I had to, you know, and when I did come back out to the truck, I was kind of, you know, sitting there, it was in the middle of the day, and I was kind of forcing the thing to idle so I could stay warm. So, but that's the longest, I, you know, because I ended up sitting probably a good 2 days, 48 hours altogether. That's probably, you know, something like that. So that's probably the longest I've ever had to sit for a closed road. Before that, I remember back, this was probably be back sometime in the 90s. I ended up having to sit in, you know, east of, well, it was, yeah, it would have been west of Laramie. There's a, probably 20, 30 miles west of Laramie. I ended up sitting for a day and a half while they had Interstate 80 closed. And that's been, that was way back in the 90s. But it seems to me that Wyoming and other states have gotten really trigger happy about closing the, you know, closing their roads. You know, if, you know, in the case of a snow or whatever. And I, you know, from their point of view, I can kind of see it because you've got all this traffic now and you got all the distracted people, and people tend to follow too close, and then you can end up with the, that's how you end up with, it's just a kind of a formula to end up with all these massive, you know, like 50 car pileups, you know, where the, everybody's following too close and they're going too fast for conditions, and something happens, and then they all, you know, it's like an accordion type accident where they can't stop because they're following too close, for, you know, especially for conditions. So I can understand why they, you know, well, we're just, snow's flying, we're just going to close this down until it stops because we don't want any massive pileups. So I can kind of understand that too, so. But they, you know, a number of states, including Wyoming, have gotten, you know, a lot more trigger happy about pulling, you know, pulling the trigger as far as closing the road, you know, if, in the case of if they decide that it's just too bad. So, but anyway, you know, made it, finally made it out of there. It was the next day I made it out of there, and I did make it to Harrisonville, Missouri, south of Kansas City for the first drop. And then the second drop was at Topeka, so I went over, you know, came over to Topeka, made the drop, thought everything was fine. Turned out it wasn't. Then I went to St. Louis, made the drop there, and surprise, surprise, there were still two pallets left on the truck. 55 cases of meat. You know, and this is like really expensive meat. 60-pound boxes. There was 55 of them, so there was, well, what I figure, around 3,300 pounds worth of probably really high-end expensive meat. And even, you know, I don't know what the wholesale price was, you know, maybe, but, you know, I'm sure, you know, I thought, well, what if it was $3 a pound, which is probably a lot more than that. $3 a pound, 3,300, that's $10,000 worth of stuff. So I called my, when I saw the two pallets, I immediately called my OS&D department, that's short for shortage and damaged, otherwise known as claims department. Called them, told them what was going on. They wanted pictures of the stuff, so I texted them pictures of the pallets and the product codes and the tags on the sides of the boxes, etc., etc. And so they contacted the shipper, and the shipper, they ended up determining was that those two pallets were supposed to go to the second drop at Topeka. But for whatever reason, they didn't take them off. Now, they claimed that they didn't have paperwork for it, and so they didn't take it off. Now, maybe, whatever. You know, I don't know. You know, that is plausible, but it's also plausible that they just failed to do it. So what ended up happening, they added a fourth drop. So I, after I, you know, sat for a while and at a truck stop in the St. Louis area, after I unloaded the St. Louis drop, they had me come back over to Topeka last night. And then so, you know, I was able to park outside the place. And then this morning I got up and they unloaded it. They unloaded the you know, those 55 cartons, and so finally got rid of it. So I ended up being on that load for like 6 days. It should have been shorter than that. If everything would have gone right, it would have, you know, maybe I would have been on the load for 3 days or something, you know, something like that. But it ended up being a total of about 6 days. But, you know, because a couple of those days were caused by the roads being closed, and then, you know, the road was closed in Wyoming, road closures, and then, you know, being an extra day because I ended up with a fourth drop back to, but I got paid for it. You know, it went from Hiram, Utah to Harrisonville, Missouri to Harrisonville, Missouri, and then Harrisonville, Missouri to Topeka, Kansas, and then Topeka, Kansas to St. Louis, Missouri, and then finally back to Topeka, Kansas. So that was this morning, and then the next load picks up here in Topeka tomorrow morning. So it's in the evening now. It picks up tomorrow morning here in Topeka, and it goes to Halifax, North Carolina. So, you know, just, you know, that's the way it worked out. And so I'm kind of sitting here at the, came over to the shipper. And so I'm just kind of hanging. This is as good a place as any. They have a Love's truck stop in Topeka. Of course, it's just a Subway and the nasty Chester fried chicken and Godfather's pizza. You know, so none of those are very good. And I don't eat pizza anymore, of course, you know, since I've been on the low-carb diet, no more, you know, I haven't had pizza in over a year. And I, you know, haven't missed it either. I'm, you know, by the way, I'm sticking to the diet. No pasta, potatoes, rice, or bread, or desserts, or pretty much. I'm sticking with it. And when I was home the last time, I actually weighed 152 pounds. So that's the, you know, I haven't weighed 152 pounds in years. You know, so it seemed like, you know, after I first cut out the pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread, you know, then it, you know, over the first two to three months, I dropped 30 pounds down to, you know, and it seemed to be hovering around 155, 158. And then now it, like I say, when I was home the last time, seemed to be a pretty consistent 152. So, you know, that can always change. You know, your weight it's not always going to be the same. You know, it's going to vary. It can vary a couple of pounds, you know, so. But anyway, I'm happy with it. You know, it seems to be pretty stable. Still, you know, no acid reflux. You know, I haven't had acid reflux now in more than a year. Feeling great. Problem that, you know, the dry skin problem that I had on the heels of my feet is virtually non-existent at this point. And so it's really quite amazing what that has done. And I am just pretty well convinced that many of the chronic problems that people are having, like high blood pressure, heart problems, artery problems, certainly type 2 diabetes. There's a number of different maladies that people are experiencing that are directly, I believe they're directly related to the lousy diet that we've all eaten for years. You know, because it's one thing, you know, well, you can say, well, they had grains in biblical times, and they had potatoes, and, you know, and they had rice and what have you. They didn't have pasta, you know, obviously. But you can say that, but then we've been raised, you know, I was, you know, kind of raised around all these processed foods, you know, the cereals and, you know, all these different processed foods that we eat, or, you know, that, and everybody, just because everybody does it, that sort of offers social proof to us that it's good. That's what I was raised. I was raised eating blah, blah, blah. I can't change now. Well, yeah, you can. You know, and just try it for a month and see what happens. Now, some people won't do it. They kind of, you know, because I still, you know, I eat in the restaurants all the time, and I've gotten really good at kind of blurting out, a little explanation, you know, of cutting out pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread, and, you know, what it's done for me over the past year. I've gotten really good at that, and a lot of the waiters and the waitresses, oh yeah, I've heard of that, and they'll say, you know, kind of sing the praises of it. Everybody's heard of it, but it's obvious, they're not following it. Once in a while, I'll catch somebody that is really, you know, really instantly enthusiastic about it. And usually it's, you know, a lot of times I get the most response when I tell them I don't have any, you know, my acid reflux is gone. I lost it. It's gone. Hey, maybe I need to try that, you know. So some people will listen, but it really is life-changing. You know, I really believe that by going on this, you know, cutting out the carbohydrates, I really believe that I sidestepped some major potential future problems, future health problems. So I'm continuing with it. You know, I feel great. Weight seems to be pretty stable, you know, and even, you know, I've still got some fat around the middle. That's never going to go away. I've had that since I was a kid. So that, you know, the kind of the belly fat is not going to go away. It shrunk, you know, but it, you know, I can still grab, I can still pinch more than an inch, you know, but that's not going to go away. That's staying there. You know, it might continue to slowly shrink, but it's, you know, it's not going to go away. And I'm not worried, you know, I'm not, you know, one of these people that wants to have the six pack. Because those muscles are there, you know, you just have to, you know, you see these bodybuilders and what have you, and they're, you know, they try to shrink the fat percentage down to the point where you can see the ribs, count the ribs and the muscles. You know, I really don't care about that. That's, you know, and those people that do that, you think, oh, they're healthy. Well, no, they're not. Not necessarily, you know, because look at how many athletes, you know, you think, oh, these athletes, they've got to be in great shape. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, fairly shockingly high percentage of them end up, you know, dropping dead of a heart attack, you know, and it's not that uncommon. You know, you have these different football players and what have you, and they dropped dead of a heart attack. Well, why? How did that happen? They're in great shape. They're doing all these exercises, and they're you know, working out and what have you. And come to find out, they got all kinds of, you know, usually heart disease and God knows what. And it's because of the diet, you know. It really is because of people are eating the wrong, they're eating poisons. You know, the poison is in the dosage. You know, because you can, you know, take something, you know, really extremely poisonous like arsenic, you can eat a little bit of it. And I don't know what the dosage would be, but you could take a little bit of it probably and eat it, and it probably wouldn't kill you. It might make you feel sick. And you could probably build a tolerance to it. You could probably eat a little bit and then a little bit more and a little bit more and build up a tolerance, a certain tolerance to it. But if you, you know, you take too big of a thing of it, you know, of course it's going to kill you. So there's a lot of things, you know, like, you know, even things that your own body produces, such as insulin. And that's really the thing that creates the monkey wrench. You know, most people, you know, I'd say a large percentage of people are walking around with high insulin levels. It's called hyperinsulinemia. High insulin levels, and of course the doctor tests the, you know, their blood sugar, does the blood test, A1C. Oh, your A1C is fine. You have nothing to worry about. Just eat whatever you want. Your A1C is great. Well, they're not testing your insulin level, and the insulin is the thing that's really doing the damage. You know, and then, of course, you're producing way too much insulin in order to compensate for the crap carbohydrate diet that you're eating. And then, you know, in the meantime, the insulin's doing all this damage. And at some point, the pancreas, the cells in the pancreas that produce insulin begin to burn out and die and get sick. Because they just can't keep up anymore. You've ruined them. You've overused them, overstimulated them. And then that's when the high sugar levels start to show up. But one of the ways you can tell that you've got high insulin levels, are you fat? I was fat. I was overweight. At one time, you know, back around 1992, yeah, it would have been around 92. I was at my highest weight ever. I was up to 225 pounds. Now, 5'10", 5'11", 225 pounds. That's probably in the obese range. And then, you know, after I quit the iClinic, then I lost 40 pounds because I wasn't around the cakes and the cookies and the candies all the time. Lost 40 pounds. My weight dropped down to about 185, where it stayed until I went on the low carb diet. So it stayed on, you know, stayed there for years, around 185. Sometimes, you know, it might have crept up to 190 at times. And so it stayed there. And then once I cut out the carbohydrates about a little over a year ago, it just, 30 pounds just fell off within 2 or 3 months. And it stayed off. So I was walking around with high insulin levels, you know, because that's what causes, you know, how are you going to get, how do you gain weight? You have to, you know, the weight gain process is driven by insulin levels. So if you have high insulin levels, the insulin is what causes the excess energy to be stored as fat. And so therefore, if you want to lose the fat, you got to lower the insulin level. But, you know, most people are walking around with high insulin levels and don't know it. And they're doing all kinds of damage to their body. You know, not only metabolically, but they're doing, in many cases, that the insulin is what's causing artery problems. It's causing heart problems. That's what's causing, you know, it causes all kinds of inflammation because it's too much. You have to have a certain amount of it. You have to have insulin or you die. You know, a type 1 diabetic doesn't have any, their body doesn't make any insulin, their pancreas doesn't make any insulin, and unless they get exogenous insulin shots, they die. They starve, they can eat all they want, and they starve to death, because the insulin is absolutely necessary for your metabolism to work, for your cells to be able to take on food energy. You have to have a certain amount of insulin, but if you have too much insulin, then that is a problem. It's a poison. It becomes a poison. And what drives insulin is too much glucose in the blood. High glucose levels. What drives high glucose levels? Too many carbohydrates. Is what drives it. So you want to, you know, want to take control of it, cut out the carbohydrates. So, you know, I don't know, you know, these, you know, like the American Diabetes Association, the American Heart Association, they're coming around. You know, you look at their websites now, and they're kind of coming around, you know, because for years they pushed this high-carb, low-fat diet as if that was the way, you know, and they all just kind of kept repeating it, and everybody, quote-unquote, knew that was that fat was bad and that the carbohydrates were good. Well, you know, just because everybody, you know, you have the so-called social proof, that doesn't make it real. Social proof doesn't make delusion into reality as much as you'd want it to. Social proof does not make your delusion into a reality. That's what's wrong with liberalism, because they think they have their social proof with their friends, you know, and they all get all emotional about it, and that's the social proof to them. But then they think that they can, you know, the social proof sort of makes their delusion into a reality. Well, I have news for you, it doesn't. There's still a delusion. So anyway, I've got a little voice file here from Joel that I want to play. So here is Joel.
Hey Tom, Joel McLaughlin here. I just thought I'd send you a Vox. Haven't heard you in there for a while, thinking about you, mostly because I just listened to an episode of Mike Dell's World where he talked about the PME from oh so long ago. And talking about Father Roderick and him and you and all those other folks that got out there in Ontario, California. It's kind of a different world now than it was back then. And podcasts are different too. So I kind of miss some of what you used to do, and hopefully you can start doing some of that. But I understand. I understand. I'm the same way. I stopped my podcast years ago now. So, but in any case, you know, here we are. Here we sit with Trump, like we thought he would. He's still in office. They didn't get rid of him. They're not gonna get rid of him, at least for four more years, is my feeling. So, we'll see what happens. But I hope you're doing well.
Thank you, Joel. Yep, things have kind of changed. I don't know. I'm not even listening to podcasts anymore, or I haven't for a while. I've kind of gotten into listening to YouTube videos, you know, because there's different types of videos that sort of lend themselves to listening to the audio. And so I don't know, I find it just kind of more convenient to do that than, so I'm not even really listening to, you know, podcasts per se, although I can, and once in a while I do. But things have, you know, they've kind of changed, and I guess there's more podcasts than ever, but, you know, they haven't gone away, you know, they've, in some cases, they've probably been, you know, more formalized and kind of commercialized to a certain extent. Obviously they're still out there, and they have whatever impact that they have. But, like I say, I've kind of at least, you know, got, you know, over, and it, I don't know, it's really over the past year, I've sort of really started listening to the audio and the YouTube videos more than anything. If I'm listening to anything at all while I'm driving, which I do quite a bit of, obviously. So, and I think that a lot of that is just because it's just convenient to do so, you know, because I can just, typically what I do, I've got a wired head, you know, like wired earbuds that I plug into my phone. And, of course I pay for the YouTube, so-called YouTube Premium, which used to be, you know, started out as YouTube Red. Now it's YouTube Premium, which is bundled with Google Music. And, if you pay for that, then you can, one of the perks is that you can, besides being able to download the videos if you want to, which I rarely do. Don't really need to, because I can stream them. The other thing is you can turn the screen off and the audio will continue to play. The YouTube video audio will continue to play, and so you can just listen and listen and listen. And then, you know, have the autoplay turned on, and it can kind of go from one thing to something else to whatever, you know. So I really find that to be pretty convenient. And, but things kind of have changed. I still enjoy podcasting, you know, doing it myself. One of the problems, if I had, you know, more interaction, it would be, you know, kind of easier if I had, you know, people asking questions and, you know, that type of thing. It would be easier for me to, you know, to find the motivation to do it. But the other problem is that if I had the interaction and if I had people asking lots of questions, would I be able to find the time to do it? I'm busier than I used to be. You know, that's one of the things that's changed over time. Excuse me. One of the things that's changed over time is the fact that I'm actually busier than I used to be. So I don't necessarily have time to devote to that. And then, of course, at one time when I was, you know, back when I was kind of doing a podcast just about every day, I was, in many cases, I was cutting into my sleep. And I'm just not willing to do that anymore. You know, for whatever reason, I'm just not motivated to really cut my sleep down like that. So I don't know, you know, what's going to happen when I retire at some point, you know, which that's all still up in the air. When I was home this last time, I did talk to this guy that, and I'm going to have to, you know, my 65th birthday is coming up, you know, it's April, in April, you know, so that's, what, a couple of months away now, or a little over 2 months away? So I need to file for Medicare. So I'll probably, you know, I need to file for Medicare, and I'll need to get some kind of supplemental Medicare insurance, which this guy sells. So, you know, that's kind of convenient. So I'm going to go ahead and sign up for the Medicare. Probably when I'm home, you know, in about a week, I'm due home, and I'll contact that guy and get, you know, talk to him some more, and probably sign up for Medicare and sign up for some sort of supplemental insurance, and then cancel the Blue Cross and Blue Shield that I have through the trucking company, because, you know, why pay for it if I'm paying for if I'm on Medicare? There's really no point, you know, and I have the supplemental, you know, the private supplemental insurance, then there's really no point in continuing the Blue Cross and Blue Shield. So I can just drop that, and but as far, you know, but otherwise, if you don't, as I understand it, if you don't sign up for Medicare when you're 65 and you wait until later, then it ends up costing you more per month, is what the way I understand it. And I was talking to this one driver recently, and he was saying just that he didn't sign up for it when he turned 65, because you've got like a 3-month window on either side of your 65th birthday to sign up for it. And then if it's, you do it after that, you have to pay this penalty. It's like 100 and something a month. It's going to cost you more because you didn't, you know, you're kind of being penalized because you didn't sign up when when you're supposed to. So I'm going to go ahead and sign up for that. But as far as what am I going to do, you know, I have to be 66 plus 2 months to retire. What am I going to do? Am I going to continue working? Well, right now I think I'm probably going to, you know, I'm going to sign up for that. I'm probably going to continue to work, maybe. You know, because I think it's really a good idea. You need to work, need to have some sort of purpose. You can't just sit around and watch television or whatever. That's a really bad thing to do. People die doing that, or they get bored, and a lot of people will do that for maybe about a year, and then they go back to work. So, don't want to do that. I know that's bad. That's not an option. So I need something to do. Now, one thing that I might do would be if, you know, that would drive me away from the job that I have right now would be, well, what if I, you know, if I'm going to drive a truck, for example, stay the hell away from places like Wyoming or Colorado. Who wants to drive in the snow in the winter? In the mountains, I don't. You know, so if you know, one option would be, well, there's a number of options, you know, like something, you know, part-time job of some sort, part-time driving job, and if it was a full-time driving job, you know, something that would, let's say it would stay in the south or the southeast and avoid the, you know, mountains in the winter. Stay the hell away from that. So, but in any case, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do yet. That's just kind of a, you know, across the bridge when I come to it. but I want to be completely out of debt and, you know, because I've, house is paid for, cars, you know, vehicles are paid for, and I want, you know, I've got money, you know, 401ks, two 401ks plus an IRA, and then, you know, I want more cash than I have besides that. So I want to be, you know, in a good cash position, put myself in a position where I could completely live on the Social Security by itself, you know, which I think that would be a good position to be in, where if I had to live on Social Security, I could, plus I've got the cash set aside. And then maybe work on top of that. And then if I continue to work after the 66 plus 2 months, then all of that, you know, all of the Social Security money that I start receiving will, you know, I'll save it. You know, so, you know, and maybe, you know, continue to amass some cash because you think, well, how much cash do you need? Well, probably more than you think, because, you know, at some point you might need, you know, the house is going to break, something's going to break, it's going to cost money, you know, vehicles don't last forever, they have to be replaced, they're certainly not cheap. So, you know, you need more money than you realize, you know, and of course then you have things like inflation that do happen. It seems to be low right now, but, you know, who knows what happens in the future if the wrong people get in. So Joel mentioned Trump, you know, and I knew Trump, you know, they're not going to get rid of Trump. I really believe Trump's going to be reelected. And after, you know, 4 years from now, there may be other Trumps. There could well be a Trump dynasty. You know, his daughter could run. His sons could run. So we could have a Trump dynasty, and I'd be happy with the Trump dynasty. Successive Trumps. So be happy with that. I think that would be great. And so the thing is, you can't, you know, these people, you know, are just going insane. You know, the possessed people, and they really are possessed. You have to realize that these people are possessed, and they could be your family members. They could be your friends. They really are. When it comes to that, they're possessed. You know, and they, you know, with the Trump hatred, Trump derangement syndrome, they really are possessed. So you can't hate them. So you don't want to make the mistake of hating them, because you become what you hate. You end up taking on the nature of what you hate. You end up with two wrong choices once you hate. You can't, you know, hating evil, resenting evil is a terrible mistake. That's how you lose the firewall to your mind via hatred, via resentment. You know, you just have to realize, you know, you can't hate these people, you know, and I'm talking about the resent, you know, whatever happens in your mind, you know, you have to be able to determine what resentment is. You have to be able to determine what that is in your own mind, and that's the thing that you have to avoid. That's the thing that you have to learn to avoid, that little feeling that, yes, if you were God hurling the thunderbolts at them to strike them dead with your thoughts, because you're not, and you can't. But that, in fact, is how you lose your connection to the to the Creator. That's how you lose your identity, the source of your identity. That's how you lose connection with it, is by resenting. By playing God, that's how you play God in your own mind, or one of the ways, probably the main way. But these people are possessed. And so you just have to, and you can't really, some of them are, you know, will go to their grave possessed. But then some of them, you know, have the potential to wake up from it. And if you resent them back, you resent their bad, you know, whatever it is that they do, their accusations or whatever, you resent them for their injustice, then, you know, you're denying them the opportunity to of redemption, to be redeemed. If you have to learn how to not hate them in the right way, not resent them when they do their injustice. It's usually accusations. The accuser, Diablo, the accuser, they're, you know, that's how mostly they, you know, they hurl words at you, accusing you of this and accusing you of that. If you can really not resent them, then you can actually offer them the opportunity to, you know, to be redeemed. And in fact, that's what Trump does. That's what he actually does. He's a great example of, you know, he goes up, you know, people accusing him, you know, of resenting and hating his, you know, and doing this and doing that and trying to get revenge. But if you actually look at how he operates, he's not resenting the people that, you know, that he's sort of dueling with. You know, and I can give you plenty of examples. You know, a lot of times he'll say, well, like with China, he says, well, you know, I would like, you know, we want to make these deals and I would like to make these deals, but it would be great for us and it would be great for China. He said the same thing with Iran, you know, and he actually talked about the potential of Iran, what, you know, what it could be, what it could become, its potential. Could live up to a potential, but you know, if it did, that would be great for all of us. But if not, that's okay too. You know, it's okay too if we don't make the deal with China. And so he's done that over and over again, and that, you know, is offering them the opportunity to you know, kind of come out of their whatever it is that they're in. You know, the state that they're in, you know, whether it's China or Iran or North Korea or whoever. And it does work. Look at what's happened with North Korea. You know, now there's a, you know, North Korea and South Korea are actually talking. You know, there's an actual possibility that, you know, something good could come out of it. You know, whereas before, if you just, you know, rant and rave and, you know, how bad North Korea is, and you resent them, then you end up with, frog in my throat, you end up with, you know, the thing where they're just bad, they go from bad to worse. So Trump sets a great example, and that, you can tell he's setting a great example because the bad people hate his guts. Because they try everything they try, they try to escalate, you know, everything they try, he handles it right. Mostly he's not perfect, but he handles most things right. Especially when it comes to not resenting his enemies. The people that set themselves up as his enemies, he does not resent them. And he's able to, you know, handle them in such a way that it just, it drives them crazy because they can't put their behavior that they want into him. That's really what it kind of comes down to, in a sense. So he is, you know, and it drives them insane. So some of them can come out of the insanity, some of them can't. And if they, you know, if you got a friend or a relative that has the insanity, that, you know, that hates, basically it comes down to hates good. If you have a friend or a relative, it could be a close relative. If you had got one of the, you know, it would be great if they could come out of it, but it's fine if they can't. Too bad for them. And that's the way I look. That's the way you have to look at it. It would be great if they could come out of it, but well, if they don't, that's fine too. Because either way, I'm not. They can rant and rave and do all the accusing they want. I'm not going to engage. You know, you can. And one way to not engage with people like that is to just kind of regard them like an inert piece of furniture, like a chair. You know, the chair, you know, that you don't have any emotional interaction with. It's either the chair's there, you just ignore it. You know, the chair can be great and it can be comfortable, but if it's not, if it's just a, you know, it could be a chair that's wobbly, or a chair that is kind of really not comfortable, all that comfortable to sit in, it's just there. Don't sit in it. And that's how you can, one way, really, I found a really effective way of dealing with people that have emotional insanity. And emotions are a form of insanity. They really are. I never say that. You know, it sounds funny. People could think that, oh, he says that because it sounds funny. Well, it's true. You know, we have a certain level of emotions emotions should be non-existent to muted to non-existent, and we end up jacking them up into things that, you know, making them into something they've never should never be. You know, and that's also, you know, kind of a formula for all kinds of problems. People love their drama. At least certain people do. And they're using the drama as a kind of a way of distracting themselves. You know, and I was talking to a friend, and I realized that one of the things that people do, you know, they have the, you know, it's kind of like this nebulous idea about the future. You know, they want, let's say they're retiring and they want to, oh, I want to travel when I retire. You know, and it's almost like they've got this kind of like an idealized delusion in their mind that they've created that somehow if they travel, they're, you know, when they're doing this nebulous traveling, that they're going to be happy. Somehow they're going to be a happy traveler in the future, in this nebulous imagined retirement future. No, they're not. If you're not happy, you're not happy in the here and now, in the present moment, then you will not be happy in some nebulous future that you're imagining. You've got to, you know, the happiness, if you're going to find it, you know, and you may not even know what the hell it is, it's in the here and now, and that's the only place you're going to find it. It's the only place it exists. Is right here, right now, and this, you know, and there's only this moment that, you know, that we have in the present moment is all that there actually is. You know, and you can plan about the future, you can talk about the past, but happiness, you know, so-called happiness is not in the it's not in the future and it's not in the past. Sorry. You know, and what is happiness? You don't even know what it is. It's kind of like, you know, what is health? You know, you don't really know what health is until you lose it. You know, once you've lost it, oh, then that's what it was. Want to try to get back to it. Well, if you're unhappy, you know, you've lost, you know, maybe you've never had it. You don't even know what it is until if you're in the wrong state, you think it's an emotion. It's not. It's not an emotion. It's also devoid of any anxiety. It's really quite an amazing thing, but it's not really a feeling per se. So I don't know, kind of all over the place with this, but maybe in the future, kind of getting back to Joel's comment, maybe in the future, you know, I might do, if and when I retire, and I'm going to obviously have to at some point, maybe I can start doing, you know, maybe more podcasting, probably more podcasting, kind of incorporate more of that, because I do enjoy doing it, and if I could somehow generate more interactions, that would be the best way to kind of motivate me to do this. You know, if I could, I don't know, maybe if I would do more, you know, some YouTube videos and kind of get people making comments that way, you know, because at one time, you know, back when I first started podcasting, people were doing email, and there was a long period of time where I got quite a bit of email, and, you know, the email interaction really kind of helped motivate me to do the podcast, to kind of, you know, interact via the email comments I was getting. But then, you know, over time, people stopped using email pretty much, or mostly they stopped doing email, and then, you know, kind of Facebook comments, you know, or other social media platform type thing, and, they're doing things on Facebook or whatever, communicating on Facebook, sort of got away from email. And so, you know, that was probably one of the reasons that I sort of dropped off, you know, because I just didn't have the interaction that I once had through the email. And I didn't, and part of that you could say was my own fault, because I really didn't change platforms. I didn't really jump into Facebook, you know, in the same way that some people did, or Twitter. Both of those I avoid pretty much like the plague at this point, because they're kind of poison, you know. And I know there's still people that are kind of screaming at each other through their Facebook comments. That's a terrible mistake. You're never going to change people's minds. So it's really a mistake to argue with people on Facebook or Twitter. So it's, you know, those are basically worthless, more or less worthless platforms, because, you know, they're just kind of, to a large extent, they're poisoned. So, you know, don't engage in the poison. Don't interact. You know, you're better off just leaving that alone, my opinion. So anyhow, so I might, I don't know, at some point, you know, if and when I retire, might do more podcasting. That's a possibility, especially if I could figure out some way of kind of garnering more interaction. I think that would be a way of really increasing my own motivation, you know, because at the end of the day, it's about motivation. My level of motivation sort of determines whether I do this or not. So if I can figure out how to, you know, kind of naturally up my motivation, I can't do it artificially, but if I can figure out some way of kind of upping my motivation, then I'd be doing more of it. And I enjoy doing it. I really do get a lot out of it. You know, I did get a lot out of it when I was doing all the interaction, you know, when people were doing all the emailing. I benefited from that tremendously, just personally, by all the interaction. But, that's still possible to do. That part hasn't really changed. I could still do that, but, you know, it's kind of hard to just sit here and interact with myself. It's much easier and much more useful if I can get real world interaction going. So that's always, you know, something that I could do more in the future, especially after I retire, whenever that is. So anyhow, guess I better be cutting this off. Hope everyone has had a great week. Hope you have a great weekend. I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.